Hear me now?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry.
Okay.
I have some new phone system, but looks like it's messing with me. Okay.
So you're calling through a phone, not through that WebEx thing?
No, WebEx is calling me through a phone.
Oh, okay. I see.
They gave me some attachment to communicate more efficiently, but that doesn't seem to work properly.
Okay.
Never mind. Okay.
All right, so maybe we should start talking about, well, Leo's been having some problems collecting the data, but finally I think he's sorted it out. I'll let Leo briefly summarize it, and then we can talk about the paper.
Okay.
Sure. So I was getting the numbers for the basic comparisons of FIO, MBNKV, and LevelDB, and I got some numbers that make some sense. The only problem that I see is that FIO fluctuates a lot from 1 to 4 threads and from 4 threads to 8 threads. Like, the performance goes up and down a lot. You see a tendency that the performance increases, but for instance, for 4 threads, it goes to the floor. I don't know why. But in general, it has a tendency the curve start increases. The number
and
of
this
threads.
Is even off with multiple runs?
Yes.
So averaging
consistently, I get a very shitty performance with 4 threads. FIO.
With FIO?
Yes.
Mm.
The benchmarking tool.
Okay.
MBNKV, we're getting better numbers that you see the performance for both reads and writes increase. So once I get that, I said I'm not going to waste any more time because at the end, this is not even a plot that we're going to use in the paper.
Mm.
We're simply going to refer to the same plot in the hot storage.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tried to collect the numbers for the first plot of the paper, which is the comparison between pools and multiple instances. So basically, you set up LevelDB to run multiple instances, and MBNKV, a single instance, multiple pools, one thread per pool. I got the numbers for MBNKV, and unlike before, now you see the performance that scales as a number of pools and threads increase. So that's the good news. The bad news is that I have some issues collecting the numbers from LevelDB, but I think I know what the problem is now, so I should be able to fix it. Are you there, Swami?
Yeah, I'm listening to you. Yeah. Your voice is a little bit low, so I'm getting most of it, but not all of it. So I'm trying really hard to concentrate and listen to you.
Okay, which part did you not get? And how about my voice? Is it good or?
Yeah, your voice actually is.
Okay,
good.
That's because of my classroom training, I guess.
Okay, I'll try to be. Because do you want me to repeat everything, or should I? Do you have any questions?
No. I got the point that you're saying that it actually seems to scale well, except for one case, it doesn't seem to scale. But with the pools, the good thing is it actually scales as expected as you want it to be, so it's better than the previous results.
Yes.
Is that a fair
summary? And the numbers with the new car are slightly higher than the previous numbers.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think that we were mainly looking to get rid of that anomaly.
Yes.
You
that was the main goal.
And that's taken care of, I think.
Yes.
And the next thing then is LevelDB data, which you are currently working on.
Yes.
And once we have that, do we have all the data once we have the LevelDB executions?
Well, that's all the data for just one graph. Then
one
we
graph.
Have to do the other graph. And the other graph might take longer.
Okay, so is there a concern that we might not make the deadline?
I don't know. I guess I could reduce the size. I don't know. I'll see.
Okay. Maybe you can give us an update so that we do not get nervous without knowing what's going on.
I'm going to start sending plots as I get them ready.
Okay, and you just add it to the paper directly. I think that would be best.
Okay, I can add it there and then let you guys know that you
yeah.
can pull the changes. So that's basically...
I'm going to ask you a very dumb question.
Go ahead.
Did you register the paper?
I forgot. No, not
okay,
this time.
That worked for me.
No, you didn't. You guys didn't get an email confirmation?
No.
Oh, well, I did get one.
No.
That's good.
Okay, perfect. It's because it's still, I think it's GMT, so I wasn't sure what time is it. That's why I want to check with you.
No, no, this time I did it over 24 hours before the deadline.
Before? Wow, okay.
Good, good, very good.
I can't allow that to happen again.
Okay.
I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about what we currently call in the paper Figure 6. It's basically an analysis of the rig cache, of the collision cache. In that graph,
okay,
we compare... no, we don't compare anything because there's only one thing that uses the rig cache. So basically, we bear the size of the collision cache, and we use as the workload YCSB. And we use the workloads A, B, C, D, and F. The point that I'm trying to make is that, according to this plot, the collision cache is not doing much for us, because it seems that only one workload benefits from it. So, the concern that I have is that perhaps this is not the best way to showcase the collision cache.
Fair enough.
Okay, so...
sorry, go ahead, Rachel.
Sorry, I'm just looking at the plot now. And workload A seems to be the only one that has any significant difference. And even that significant difference... Actually, it's a pretty big difference, right? When you go from no collision cache to some collision cache, there is a... I would say it's about... at least a 30% or 20% jump in performance. Whereas it's true that the other workloads, the performance difference is actually not that big a difference. In fact, the lower performance goes down when you add a collision cache. It seems like, but I mean, again, that change is not significant.
But it is consistent that it goes down.
Goes down a little bit when you have a collision cache, when you do when you're doing loads, because every time you do a load, the cache is always going to fail, because and you're using some memory for the collision cache. I don't know how much that would be, and that's the memory.
But the collision cache, I think, it's 64 megabytes in size by default.
So then the memory shouldn't matter. I think probably the computation, which is the checking of whether something is cached or not, is the overhead. Whereas in the load phase, there would be no hits. So the cache lookup becomes the overhead.
Yeah.
And for workload A, workload B, C, D... In F, there is hardly any improvement or degradation. By the way, so the load phase is common across all the workloads, which is why we have a single line. All right. And the upper plot is the execution phase for each of those workloads. And you're right. So that's not the best way to showcase the collision cache, I agree. Seems like the YCSB workloads, at least the good thing is that they don't seem to be significantly affected negatively by the collision cache, except during the load phase. It seems like there's maybe a 5% or 10% decline in performance with the collision cache. The other thing that's telling me that it's not the memory of the collision cache is because, regardless of the size of the collision cache, the degradation is pretty much the same. But it's constant, so it's most likely the additional computation that's involved in making checks in the collision cache.
Right.
do you know what distribution of the keys that LevelDB uses for this experiment? Sorry, YCSB uses for this experiment?
Well, it depends on the workload.
No, is it Zipf-ian uniform or the keys, basically?
Again, the key generation is completely random. In the low phase,
but it's completely random. No matter what you do, it's not going to improve, right?
Yeah, but it seems like there is a benefit in workload A.
Workload A, yeah.
Right. But that's okay. So you're talking about the execution phase, right? Not the low phase.
No, the execution phase.
Yes. A is a Zipf-ian. Is Zipf-ian. I am almost certain. Yeah.
If it is actually Zipf-ian, then we actually should see benefits because you'll actually have a lot more keys of the same content or the same, sorry, the key
value. The
key yes. value. Yeah, not the value, but the keys value or the keys content should be the same. So the collision catch should actually improve. That is why I'm a little bit surprised that it actually is not improving for these workloads.
Yeah, and I think all of them are a variation of Zipf-ian, because there's one that they call latest, but it's also similar to Zipf-ian.
Latest.
Okay. So is it possible, again, if you have time, right, is it possible to find out how many collisions, just run one test, I don't want to run all the tests, just compute the number of collisions and the things that actually get hit from the cache. That will tell us whether if it's Zipf-ian and how bad the distribution is or how good the distribution is.
Well, I know that it's Zipf-ian because that's what YCSB says it is. And I agree with you that if that is true, we should get the effectiveness of the collision cache should be depicted here somehow,
yep.
Right? Because basically you get many hits and very few keys.
Yeah. So that's what is really throwing me off here.
And the... okay. Well, why is it called a collision cache? Is it called a collision cache because it's only useful when there is a hash collision?
Yes.
Correct.
Then the question is, how many hash collisions do we have? Would we have many hash collisions? Why would we have hash collisions?
Because if it's Zipf-ian, it means that the same key would be used multiple times for doing the operation of this workload.
Is that called a hash collision?
Yeah, because whenever you're given a key, right, it'll act, when you compute a hash function, it has to actually collide. If the same key is used multiple times, even if the same key is used, it is going to collide.
Oh, that's not a conventional understanding of a hash collision. Conventional hash collision means that two different keys map to the same hash slot.
That is also possible. So
I think it solves
that.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up because is I just wrote this part, and now when I'm looking at this data. The collision cache is not just about handling hash collisions, it's also about handling cache hits.
My understanding is that when the goal of the collision cache is to avoid having multiple IOs per operation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct, Swami?
Goal of the collision cache is to reduce multiple IOs per operation, that is correct.
Okay.
And this mainly happens based on the distribution of keys, right? I mean, if every key is unique...
No, okay, let's talk about the I/O operations that are happening.
It's a read and write.
Okay, and why do you have additional I/O operations?
Because you hash a key that
okay.
gives you an LBA.
Mm-hmm.
The LBA is currently used, so you have to rehash.
How do you know it's currently used?
You have to issue a system call to tell, do I have anything in this logical address?
You mean an IO request to the device?
But the,
not a system call.
Well, it is a system call, right?
It's
through the external interface. So besides read and write, you have there's a function that you say, hey, do I have anything in this logical address?
Okay.
If the answer to that is yes, then you have to rehash.
And that IO octal, does it translate into an IO request?
Yes.
No.
No, that one is in memory. No. Yeah, that's true. That doesn't turn in. It's an in-memory operation.
Okay, let's start again because I'm lost midway. Okay, so you have, let's say you have a put operation and you have a key X.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the NVMKV library is going to do what to handle the put operation?
So you hash, that gives you an LBA.
The NVMKV library will create a computer hash function. Will compute a hash value for the key X,
right?
And then
that hash is basically the LBA in which you're going to write. Before you write, you have to confirm that there is nothing in that address.
Mm-hmm.
If there is nothing, you simply write.
How do you confirm that there is nothing in the address?
You can issue a call, a system call.
Okay.
Through it's basically an IOctl. And you say, is there anything in this in this logical address?
I don't think there's an. Can you do an IO octal where you just examine the contents of you have to do a, like
in traditional block layers not, but in the one exposed by this device you can do that.
So what is that? Do we talk about that IO octal somewhere in the paper? Yes, we have to, right?
I think there's a discussion of the primitive, right? Exists, yeah, that one.
Execute exists for a contiguous LBA as an ACID transaction. Okay. So this is an atomic exists. But this is an FTL primitive, which DirectKV builds upon.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so the DirectKV is going to do an atomic exist. What happens in this exist? Do we know that?
My understanding is just a query on memory. So you have a map between logical addresses and physical addresses, and that map is in memory.
Oh, that map is in memory. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so that atomic exists is going to tell NVMKV whether something is there or not. And if it's, let's say if it's not there, it's going to write it.
Right.
If it's there,
then you have to rehash.
But before you rehash, do you cache the result?
What was that, Swami?
So the small thing, yeah. You have to first, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So there are two things. One is if you have something exists, you need to first find out if it is the same key or a different key. You have to read the contents to verify that. If it's going to be the same key, in that case, you write it back into the same place.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you rehash and write it to an alternate location and do the same process.
Okay.
Check to see if somebody else has written there and then go through that.
Okay, makes sense. Now, let's say you write something to a specific LBA. What do you put in the collision cache?
Okay, so now that comes, sir, I'm going to give you bad news.
Okay.
So I recently found out, ideally what you should put is LBA is mapped to a particular key.
Yeah.
We actually have the collision, at least they have the collision cache builders, key mapped to LBA. So the collision cache is not effective as much as you want it to be.
No.
In a sense.
A key map to LBA, okay. So a key is mapped.
So only when you Sorry, go ahead, Roger.
No, I'm just trying to understand what that means. Key mapped to LBA means you wrote a certain key in a certain LBA.
Right.
Correct.
Correct.
That's in the cache.
So why is that not effective, Swami?
Hold on. Let me. We can talk about that too, but let me go a little slower. So key map to LBA is what the collision cache contains. All right.
Correct.
So next time I say put key X, which is the same key. I do not have to issue a system call to say does the hash of X exist or not. I already know that X is mapped to LBA as per the collision cache, so I avoid doing this exist operation. Correct?
Not only exist, you also avoid doing a read operation also.
Yes, okay, that's the detail that I want to know more about. Why do we avoid a read operation?
That's because, so one of the things is basically the whole key is not hashed, right? It's only part of the key is hashed into the LPA space. How can you guarantee that this is the exact key that was written previously? The only way that you can do is to read the entire data or that metadata of that KV pairs or that's stored on in that LPA. Read the key, actual key value key, actual key's content, and then compare it with what you are trying to insert, and then confirm that it is the same key to overwrite it.
Okay.
Without this hash, you're actually in dark. You have to do the read operation. So this hash actually helps you prevent...
You mean cache?
Yeah, it's collision cache, basically.
Yeah.
Prevents you from unnecessarily doing a read operation.
Oh, I see. So you say, you're saying that maybe instead of having key to LBA, you should have key to LBA plus hash. So instead of having key a mapping from key to LBA, it should be a mapping from key to a tuple, LBA and hash?
No, you can compute the hash from the key.
It should be an LBA to key, not a key to LBA.
An LBA to key.
So the way to think about it, the way to think about it is, let's say something is actually... okay, sorry, I just got distracted. Okay, now let's take the simple example. No matter what, everything... all you care about whenever you want to insert a key or read a key is what is stored in that LBA. Is things stored in the LBA is something that we care about?
Yes.
Because I don't care which... because right now, it is restricted to just being the same key being inserted multiple times. Think about the case where you have two keys, K1 and K2, which both hash the same LBA.
Yeah.
Okay. In that case, the collision cache is useless. At least the current implementation of the collision cache doesn't solve the problem for you.
You will see that you don't have hash value to LBA. You just have key to LBA.
Exactly, that's the problem.
So you
need LBA to key, not the key to LBA. Yeah.
No. Okay. The hash value is.
Let's go slowly. Yeah.
The hash value is, I see what you mean. So the hash value is the LBA.
Exactly.
And given a LBA, you want to find out what exists there.
Exactly.
Which may be the same key you're trying to insert or a different key. And you have to know that
exactly.
Information. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know who implemented this earlier. So I'm working with them to change it to this format. So what this means is that the collision cache is not as effective as we want it to be. But that said, but if it's going to be a Zipf-ian distribution, the current implementation should solve or improve the efficiency of it, which still we're not seeing it. That's what really confuses me.
So I'm assuming that when they implemented the collision cache, they tested whether it makes sense or not, right? Is there any data that proves that this was a good idea?
It's a good idea,
yeah,
but it's not a great idea.
Your voice is breaking. Sorry, I couldn't hear what Raj said.
I said that what you have right now is a good idea, but it could be a great idea if done slightly differently.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, but still... Even with this good idea, which is not great, we should see the benefit because this only happens when there's a collision of the hash. I'm assuming that the hash that we're using is good enough so that there are no many of these collisions that we're talking about.
Yeah. That's true. And that ideally shouldn't exist so many collisions. Yeah.
There are some workload that actually helped confirm this assumption. So they had some micro benchmarks, and there are also one customer who actually wanted... to insert the same key multiple times. Like he actually had a non-uniform distribution.
Yeah.
So it did make sense for those cases. But while you're doing it, ideally I would have preferred it to be implemented in a more generic manner rather than being a more restrictive manner to solve the current immediate use case.
So the collision cache should help for this workload, which is as a Zipf distribution, and it's not helping. And it should be helping because it should be saving a bunch of read operations. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yep, that is correct.
Unless the reads are somehow cached anyway, somewhere else.
The collision cache also help you.
No, we don't actually cache. It's all direct I/O and this thing, so it should not be cached anywhere.
Does the collision cache help you also with reads?
Can you hear it again, Leo?
This is a workload that is read intensive. Does it benefit from the collision cache as well?
Yes, it does.
Because,
for example, if there is a key that would be found only by hashing two times or three times, you have to resolve the collisions and stuff. You don't have to deal with it because if you directly check the collision cache, and if you say that it's located at some offset, then or LBA, we can directly go to the LBA and read the data instead of actually trying to hash it once, read the data, find that it's not the same data that you want. Rehash it again, find the alternate location, go back and find out it's not there.
Yeah.
So you can avoid all the unnecessary reads that you want to do. So it should improve the reads also.
If it's the same key.
Right.
So if the address that you're trying to read, if that key is already in the collision cache, it is guaranteed that it's going to be one IO.
Yes.
Yes.
But the scenario that you're describing, Swami, which is that you collide, you find that a key is not in a hash value once, twice, so on. That's very rare, right?
Yeah.
That means you have hash collisions, and that we said is true.
It's okay. Relatively, it's rare, but once the key value store is filled, then there is a high chance that it can actually happen.
But we have like all this math that we put in the paper where we said that the collision probability is 1 divided by 2 to the 40 or something like that. Sorry, 2 to the...
1 by 32.
Sorry, 2 to the 5. Yeah, 1 by 32. 1
yeah.
by 32, yeah, that's... Yeah, sorry, I was thinking about the put failing. Sorry, so that's not it.
Yeah.
Okay, this is collisions and this could happen more frequently, once in 32 times.
Yeah.
Now I had one more thing. So you could have those collisions even if you're just doing reads, and if there are collisions, then the collision cache should help. Okay, so the collision cache is helping when you have collisions, so that you don't have to do additional reads to find out once again that you've collided in the past, right? That's what the collision cache is good for.
Yeah. Or if you enter it in once, or once you know the record of it, then you can leverage it in subsequent iterations.
Yeah, so that's the part that is not... That is the optimization probably the more... That's also significant optimization, but the term collision cache doesn't suggest immediately that even this is possible. Right,
okay.
Because it's saying collision. That's not a collision. That's a hit, right?
Yeah.
Hit in the translation.
Basically, it's the key to LBA cache that is used to resolve collisions or something.
Yeah, resolve collisions. Yeah. Okay. Well, for now we're calling it collision cache, but maybe the writing should be a little bit better to describe.
That
it's not just a collision handling mechanism, it's also a hit handling mechanism to speed up the operation so that you don't have to confirm. Right?
Yep.
Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So I've gone through that section already, Swami. So maybe you can do this when you're doing your pass.
Okay. So I actually changed 3 and 4. I think it should be in 5. Okay.
This is in 5.
I started 5. Yeah. So I started 5. So I'll probably update that accordingly.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Okay. That's good. But I suddenly understand a lot more about the collision cache than I did before. That's good. Okay, so now about the, I think the writing of the evaluation section is the key, which is going to make or break the submission. And at this point, I was talking to Leo earlier before you joined, or maybe, I don't know, that it seems like we might have an issue with the timing, the way the experiments are going. And I'm a little concerned. And I want to see what... Maybe Leo can update us, keep updating us every day at some point to tell us how things are going and if we need to make change of plans.
Okay.
And revert back to the previous. Because I'm... It's possible that may happen if we don't have everything. Right?
Okay.
Is that fair to say, Leo?
I don't have any better idea, so we can roll with that one.
I'm saying, is that a valid concern, or I'm just, you know...
Oh, no, I think it is a valid concern, yes.
Mm.
I don't think we should rush the evaluation session.
Mm.
We should spend good time writing it to make sure that everything is clear.
But the issue I have is that even the previous version, we don't have the evaluation section written.
True. And
so at some point, we have to say, go with the previous or go with the new, because we have to do the writing.
Right. The main problem with the previous one is that there are some experiments that we cannot explain.
Okay. So I would suggest that, can we talk on Thursday same time, Swami? Because at that point,
okay.
Do you have time at 3:30 on Thursday? Or
I'm quickly checking. I think it should be okay. Yeah, 3:30 Eastern time works for me.
Let's try to get as much of the data with the new experiments until then, and hopefully we'll be in a much better position to decide what to do, because the writing may have to, you know, change if you're going to revert back to the previous version of the experiments, and we might have to discuss the issues that we have with the previous data that we are unable to explain, right?
Yes. One possible choice.
Raju and Leo, is it possible to hold up for 1 minute that I'll actually transfer it? Nisha is free now. I'll just quickly move to her office and we can continue the discussion there.
Sure. Should we just stay on the line then?
Yeah, stay on the line. I'm just going to redirect my call to that office.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. Thanks.
I was thinking that maybe we can just redo in a new machine. Just as a way, just this one that we can explain, because the other ones we can explain. The other two plots.
Hmm.
It's true, we're going to have two different experimental setups, so I don't see a problem with that.
Which plot are we unable to explain?
The one before that one.
One before this one? Oh yeah, I don't see that here. That's the one we can't explain.
Yeah.
Hey, that's actually the reasonable thing. That may be a reasonable compromise for us. And you already have this plot.
I have just ending KD. I'm trying to get level DB.
Which means you have two lines and you're missing three lines.
Yes. But I will get the three lines at the same time.
Oh, you'll get three lines with one experiment.
One experiment gives me like these three, the other one, these three, the other
one. Oh,
okay,
three. Okay. But you have all the points for NVM KV.
Yes, I have. Actually, I this is 128, right?
Yeah.
I have it. So here.
32.
So I need these two?
Yeah.
So we could do that.
Okay. And in the current version of the eval, do we refer to the previous paper and say that has already been done previously? Oh yeah, I think we do. Previous work has established the performance of the basic approach.
Right. These numbers I think we can explain.
Yeah, I mean, have we explained it, or do we still need to? I think there were some issues, some questions that I had asked. Hi, Nisha. So, Leo had this idea, which is that, you know, it seems like we can use most of the data from the previous setup, except this one plot, which we are unable to explain.
Okay.
And just for that plot, we could use the new setup and
sure.
and still make it all work. And so the only thing is that we would have to talk about multiple setups, which is possible, but kind of funny. A reviewer may ask, why do you have these two? Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Swami.
I would rather just say that one setup and still run it in two places, and then we can actually, while we are waiting, we can run all those tests and get the new numbers and update it, and that might make it simple, right?
Yeah, I think we would like to do that, but I think we were talking about the case where by Thursday we figure out we cannot get data from the other setup in time.
It's just as a backup plan.
Yeah.
I did the one and I continue working on the others. But I think the numbers that we have for the other plot, they make sense. So I don't expect them to change drastically in the new setup.
The size of the collision cache is the other plot that is somewhat unexpected.
Yes.
Where the performance really does not change much as the size of the collision cache increases. And that's
right.
Unexpected.
But this is a complete new experiment. We didn't have that in the previous setup. In the previous paper.
Of course. But, I mean, I'm talking about the previous setup, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
all
yeah,
of
yeah.
this is part of the previous setup. And that's... Since we are talking about plots that we could not explain from the previous setup, this would be another potential plot that we would want to create in the new setup.
Yes.
In preference to... So figure 6 in preference to figure 5. Because figure 5, although it's from the previous setup, we can explain it. So we could, in the worst case, choose to retain just that guy from the previous setup and have everything else from the new setup. This is a backup plan, of course. So once you have, I think, Leo, once you have this figure, what is this figure? Figure 4, which is what you're currently getting data for, maybe you should jump to figure 6 and see if there is any difference. Maybe the new plot is as bad as the previous one, right? That this collision cache is ineffective, which is the conclusion of figure 6 right now. Yeah, no problem, sure. The funny thing that we are seeing, Nisha, I don't know if you've seen this kind of data before, is that for the YCSB workload, it seems like the collision cache really is not helping all that much at all. Swami was kind of describing to us why he thinks that the collision cache should be making a difference. Because these workloads use a Zipf-ian distribution for accessing data, and the collision cache should help in that kind of distribution. But we don't really see much benefit, except for one workload, which is workload A. The other workloads don't seem to be affected at all. There are two phases to this workload, each of these workloads. There is a load phase, which we actually separate out into a different plot.
Yes.
And there is hardly any impact of collision cache for the load phase. It's shared across all the workloads. And for the execution phase is what I was referring to earlier. There seems to be no impact except for workload A. And in the execution phase, what do workloads do? They do both reads and writes, correct?
Yes.
Each of these workloads?
Some of them do reads and writes. Some of them do at different ratios, like 50-50, 95-5, just reads, or read, modify, write, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is reads and writes.
And everything is Zipf-ian, drawn from a Zipf-ian distribution, or?
Most of them. The other one is called Latest, which they think simulates the workload of Facebook, in which you have an update, and then there are many reads part of the update.
Mm.
So that's what they call the Latest distribution.
You see.
But still, it's mostly reads, and it's highly concentrated in different points.
Mm. So there is a Zipf-ian-like distribution, even for that Latest
right.
workload.
Right. So if I were to sort of think through this, it makes sense that the load phase is not impacted by the collision cache because there shouldn't really be substantial overwrite during the load phase. So that makes sense. Now, almost zero. Now, if we look at the other workloads, you know, the collision cache as it is currently designed is really intended to help you if you overwrite the same key-value pairs over and over and over again. And so if there's a significant amount of percentage of writes in a Zipf-ian workload, then it is certainly likely that you will see overwrites. But if the workload itself is Zipf-ian but majority reads, then what you are talking about is a subset of the writes. And so, like, say, the thing with Zipf-ian is that Zipf-ians have a long tail, right? So even the Zipf-ian itself, you know, it doesn't have, like, it's not perfect with respect to its locality. So is it possible that the number of overwrites is just too small for the benefit to be really that obvious? I'm just, you know.
Nietzsche, I think that's exactly the explanation for this, because what I remember is that workload A, which is the one that is 50% read, 50% writes, that's the one that performs the most amount of writes, and is only 50% of the operations. And out of that 50%, that's a Zipf-ian distribution, so very small number of those are getting updated many times, which is probably why we can see that only workload A benefits from the collision cache.
And even that benefit stops at the first point, right? As soon as you add 20 megabytes of collision cache, you get all the improvement that you can get. And adding anything more than that of the collision cache doesn't help even workload A. But Swami earlier was saying that even reads could benefit from the collision cache. Did I hear that right, Swami?
Yes, that depends on the use case, basically. Reads can get benefited. For example, if there are two keys that hash to the same space,
right?
So in case you don't have this collision cache, you have to read the first location where the data is in, find that it's not your key that you're searching for, rehash it, and go back and find the actual location that it was stored in.
Okay.
So you don't do two things. But if you actually have this collision cache, and if the key and values, the location of the key is stored, then you can avoid this whole one additional read and then get it improved. But it only will help in the case where there is a collision.
Right. Here's a bit of a different way to think about it, okay? There's two ways that you can have a collision. One of them is when two different keys collide in the hash space, which means these keys are not the same. They happen to hash to the same LBA. That's a naturally occurring collision, and as long as you have a good hash function, the likelihood of what I would call a naturally occurring collision is the trade-off between the number of keys you can store in the drive and how many distinct hash slots you can accommodate. And since the number of distinct hash slots is fixed, it's really a question of if you take the number of distinct hash slots and you apply it to a larger and larger drive where the amount of resident keys goes up while the hash slots don't go up, then the frequency of naturally occurring collisions goes up. But this is very unlikely to actually materialize in your workload, Leo, because, you know, just, you know, if you look at, you know, abstractly, you know, I think we did some math at one point and said that if you take a 1 terabyte drive and you fill it, you know, all the way through with the smallest possible key value pair and generate like a billion key value pairs, you know, you're still only looking at a naturally occurring collision rate of 3%. So
right.
Given the
Mm-hmm.
Now, the unnatural collision is when you write the same key over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because then what happens is that the system knows there's something there, but it doesn't know what it is.
Right.
And so that particular kind is the one that's actually likely to happen in your workload, and the more writes there are, the more that will happen. And, mm-hmm. and to your point, Raju, you know, the way that the Zipfion works is you get about 50% of the accesses in the first 10% of
mm-hmm.
the popularity ranks, and after
mm-hmm.
that, increasing it further doesn't really give you much.
Right. Okay, so... okay, sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that helps us understand why we see what we're seeing here.
And then I think this plot may give... it's a reasonable plot. Well, one thing which we could do to make this plot a little bit more informative is to have additional points in the 0 to, I would say, 40 megabyte range, then to go all the way up to 140 megabytes of collision cache, which I don't think helps for any of these workloads. And then we might be able to see a little bit more detail as to what's happening, because right now the resolution of the figure is pretty poor to convey any kind of message.
Okay.
So I would say if we can do collision caches of size 0, 5, 10, 15, 20, increments of 5 or 10 up to 40, then we would see a little bit, you know, a little better granularity of information. But it's good to know that workload A is the only one that can potentially benefit in any significant way from the collision cache. The other workload that I see benefiting maybe just a little bit is workload F. I see that benefiting, you know, by a minuscule amount, maybe like 5% or something. And what does workload F do?
I'm trying to read here, but I don't have internet in this computer. I think
That's
the latest one.
Oh, that's the latest. I see.
But I'm not sure.
So that involves reads. Writes too.
There are some writes, but the writes are very skew as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. I mean, if we want to go, I would say we should, in the worst case, we should stop at 60, because beyond that, it's really not much benefit. And I would say let's stop at 40. What does it take to get these this data again? I think we picked one... we picked one memory size or something, right? Read cache size. Yeah, we picked one read cache size and we varied the collision cache size.
Yeah, I think the read cache size here was 0, not read cache size at all.
Okay. I see. Read cache is 0. Okay. I think if we turn up the read cache, then there will be more impact of the collision cache, because writes will be the bottleneck. And collision cache helps with writes. But then we might see more impact of the collision cache if we... Maybe we can have two plots, one with the read, with the same one, which is the read cache of 0, and another with the read cache that helps performance, like you know, what is the 1 gigabyte read cache on the upper plot. I think they will convey different stories, because if the read cache is going to address all the reads, then writes become the real problem, and the collision cache is going to be valuable, much more valuable than when the read cache is non-existent.
The main issue with these workloads is that there are not many writes.
True, but if you eliminate all reads because of the read cache, then writes become everything.
Well,
from a performance standpoint,
it seems that only two workloads actually benefit from the read cache. Workload A and workload F. B a little bit, but not that much.
Okay. I see. Well, I think that what we will see with the read cache of 1 gigabyte is that the collision cache has enlarged effect, because it's addressing writes which are the sort of the remaining operations after you go through the read cache. So it might be worth doing two such plots of figure 6 and also increasing the resolution a bit within each plot.
Okay.
So after what you're doing, Leo, I think it makes sense to do figure 6 because in the worst case, we can always use figure 5 from the previous setup and we can explain figure 5 without any problem, right?
Okay.
So I'm thinking about doing incrementals of 8 megabytes at a time from 0 to 64.
Okay, sure. Yeah. It's fine too. Yeah, because you have a few points already, is what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. That sounds good.
Can we think of another workload that will illustrate better this
collision cache? Yeah, I think a write-only workload, will illustrate it the best, right? And I think that's what I was trying to get at with the read cache, which is we'll convert these workloads into write mostly workloads.
It's very simple to create a workload that is mostly writes. Like for instance, the one I think B is the one that is 95% reads, 5% writes.
Yeah,
I think you can just change that, make it 95% writes, 5% reads.
We could do that, but that raises a question mark in the reviewer's mind, right? Whether that's the right thing to do or not. We've done it in the past to say that, okay, we are exploring a bigger space by doing this, and then we always got feedback saying, oh, but you're changing the benchmark, and it's difficult to defend that in general. Where we say, okay, we're going to add a couple more workloads to this existing benchmark to explore a bit. We could do that. I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but I'm just saying that this is the feedback we've received in the past. What do you guys think, Swami and Nisha?
It's a good point. So I'm debating, but the point is, right, if you really want to show the benefit of the collision cache, but like we can explain to them why touch workloads are not going to be benefited. But at the same time, you can add new workloads to Leo's point, where you can add workloads that actually highlights the benefits of collision cache. I think it's still a valid contribution.
No, I think what I was mentioning earlier is that we can still showcase the benefit of the collision cache if we turned on the read cache, because then reads will become less of the performance dictator, right?
Dictator, absolutely, yeah.
So then writes will become dominant, and then this collision cache actually helps for writes. So I think it makes sense for us to have another experiment with the read cache turned on to max. Whereas,
yeah,
because
right.
Here it's read cache is 0.
Oh, okay. That's a great point. Yeah, I agree with you.
It makes
a lot of sense. Yeah.
I think that's better than adding another workload and making writes dominant to ICSV.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
All right, so we have a plan of action, Leo. And should we talk on Thursday at 3:30 then?
Okay.
Yeah.
In the meanwhile, Swami, I'll continue my work on the previous sections. I think sections 6 and 7 are the ones that I'm left with. I think I'm done with all the previous ones. And 6 and 7 don't seem to be as long. Section 5 was pretty long. I mean, there's lots of things going on there. But I think I'm hoping that it reads better now, section 5. I'll let you know as I make more progress.
I'm trying to work on addressing all your comments first.
Yeah.
And those are simple enough to do.
Okay.
And then I'll check her to see if she has time to take a pass at the paper.
I'm going to try to do a pass this weekend, but I don't want to hold you guys up.
Okay. Okay, I'll coordinate with her and then first I'll apply all your comments that you want us to address.
Okay.
First, all things to do and then that we can actually work on adding more or refining what we have right now.
One thing which I want to warn you is that we are well over the page limit. So we need to figure out, I mean, when you guys write and you see that there is some paragraph that can pretty much go away, I would encourage you to think about getting rid of it or sentences or some descriptions, because we are really over the page limit right now.
The page limit is 12.
Yeah, we are at, I think we are at 14 or something like that. Because eventually we'll have to cross that bridge at some point.
It's in 5 days, so yeah, it has to happen soon, so...
February 3rd?
Yeah.
Yeah, is there anything else we need to discuss?
No, not that I need to, but so... I pushed my changes for 3 and 4.
Okay.
I'll do the same for other sections and keep pushing my changes to the first three.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds good. And send us an email if you know, whenever you push any changes, that would good, it would be good to know.
Yep.
Okay.
So 3, 4 I pushed already.
Okay.
So when you do the section 5 and other sections that are there ahead of it, except for 6 and 7, I'll do the same. And then, depending on Nishant's availability or time, we'll work on taking up complete parts of the paper. Either myself or I'll ask Nishant to do that. And then we should be in a good state, hopefully, by end of weekend, I guess.
Right. The other thing I was thinking of, and this, of course, requires space, is to... Well, actually, we have figure one, and that's certainly helpful. I was thinking of like doing some sort of an architecture diagram, but I think figure one covers most of what I was thinking. So yeah, I take it back. Figure one is probably reasonable. Okay, sorry. Forget about it.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So, are we meeting on Thursday at 3:30 then?
Yep. I'll send you a break as soon as we hang up.
Okay. Great. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Leo.
Okay.
Any updates about the parts for the laptop?
I think you saw the email that I got too. I wrote about and she said that Catherine said that she hasn't sent out the order. She was planning to send it out this week.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll get it soon. Usually it doesn't take much time once this stuff is ordered, because it's a direct like order from Newegg or one of these places that Catherine can place herself, and it's much faster. It doesn't have to go through the normal FIU purchasing department, because these are small items.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different way.
All right.
It's much faster. Yes, okay. All right.